This one's with Olive Knight, Indigenous performer, all the way from Northern WA, up in the Kimberleys there. She's in town at the moment. She's performing in Hugh Jackman's Broadway show. She does a song there towards the end of the show. She's approximately, she's nearing her 70th birthday. That'll happen next year. She's a blues and gospel performer, and when it comes to Indigenous performers, there's only a handful that specialise in that. And she's got a new album out that came out earlier this year, which is an absolute killer. Caught up with her during the week. Let's have a listen to that interview right now. What a great track that is. I absolutely love that one. And that's off a relatively new CD or album that came out earlier this year. The album's called Heroes and Laments, Walmajari's Stories, Desert Blues by Ken Cohen and Gara, also known as Olive Knight. I've actually got Olive Knight in the studios here of 3CR. She's in Melbourne at the moment. Welcome to the show, Olive.
Thank you.
You hail from Northern WA, don't you?
Yes, I do.
What's the community called up there?
The community is called Wangajunga Community.
Yes, I thought I'd better get you to pronounce it rather than myself. I would have made a real mess of it, I'm sure. Tell us a bit about the community.
The community is situated about 120 kilometres from our nearest town, Fitzroy Crossing, and it's mainly settled by people who have come in from the desert during the desert hardships of the 1960s, I think it was, or not, sorry, previous, the 1950s or more. So the community exists at the edge of the desert, and it's mainly accommodates some desert people there.
And obviously when you were growing up, way back when, I imagine it was it a much larger community than it is now?
Yes, it was a much larger, there were more people than what it is now, because since the influx of the desert people, the community itself was kind of situated on a pastoral lease. Since then, since the community sort of moved away from the pastoral lease, the community started to diminish because of other factors, you know, that came and sort of interrupted the living lifestyles and all that. So,
well, how does an Indigenous female from the Wangkatjungka, I mean, that's how I'm going to call it, community, get to play blues and gospel? How did all that come about?
Well, actually, in the 1950s, I was taken by the mission and placed in a dormitory, the mission, the United Aborigines Mission. And I actually was with the mission. I was brought up as a singing in choir and singing mainly gospel tunes, gospel choir stuff, you know, the hymns and all that. But I've only discovered later on that was this voice that I used with the choir or gospel singing, it wasn't me. I knew that I was much more suited to another style of singing. So that's why since I started listening to the blues and rock and roll of the 1960s, I began to, start mimicking, people like Cliff Richards and Buddy Holly and all those people. And then I heard about the blues in the United States and all that, and I thought, well, this is my kind of blues, my kind of music. So I sought to find out a lot more about it and all that, but wasn't too sure how to go about it, just listening to radio. And
yeah. That first track we played, I don't think I actually announced it, it's called Tell You a Story. Now, I almost detected a bit of Canned Heat in that.
Yes, it is. It was the influence was from Canned Heat, going up countries. Track
classic
was called
Canned Heat song.
Yes, so, and that was actually co-written with my first blues mentor, Mr. Ivan Zarr. And he practically influenced, mentored me into different ways and the styles of, sort of singing rather than keep to the original Canned Heat stuff. It was sort of more or less desert, my own indigenous style of singing.
Tell us a bit more about Ivan. I mean, he's one of the great players in Perth. How did you manage to hook up with him?
Well, I actually met Ivan first. I met him busking, actually, in a town called Derby in the West Kimberley. And he'd sort of go up there and just sort of visit, during festivals and all that. But I saw him busking, and that was the first time I heard this beautiful music, and I thought, my, this is it. So I have to follow this stranger, whoever he was. And he did a gig that night and at a sports club, I think, and I had to go and listen to him again and all that, and I paid to go in. But it wasn't your usual kind of indigenous area, more or less. But I wanted to, sort of listen to Ivan. So then Ivan and I became friends, and we sort of then later on did some, sort of couple of tours and all that. And I just kept, sort of being on to him about different things, about like what he knew, his knowledge of the blues and all that. And I just really kind of was so desperate and passionate about the music, so I had to pursue the person himself who knew, had a knowledge of them.
Just going back to your very, very early days and when you were born, you almost weren't with us for this journey, were you, in the early days? Because I believe that the decision was made to keep you alive rather than get rid of you, so to speak.
Yes. Well, I had a very troubled ever since birth because of tribal protocols and all that. So my past was very, very troubled, and actually wasn't kind of even existing the earth at the very early age of being birthed, you know, born,
yeah.
And because of cultural protocols that were forbade different, you know, like female especially, and other, you know, because I was born to the love match between my mother and my dad was a forbidden love match, because then the child had to be practically, you know, either destroyed or,
he killed at birth, so to speak.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the decision was made not to go ahead with that. Who made that decision?
Well, let me say, I'm very, very grateful and thankful to this dear old lady whom I call kind of, well, she was my great-grandmother, and she actually literally fell on top of me and was protecting me from the rock that would have practically taken my life, smashed me, and I wouldn't have known anything. So,
yes, unbelievable story. Mm-hmm. And look where you are now. What a terrific journey it's been. You've done quite a lot of things in your time. You've just mentioned the hardship. Just how tough was it in those years?
Well, a lot of it was very, very tough, because it derived from the tough situation and tough circumstances and that we had lived during the 50s and the 60s, because a lot of us were herded into pastoral leases where we were treated as slaves, more or less, and just living on meagre diet of flour, tea and sugar, and hardly any meat, and no fresh vegetables or fruit whatsoever. So it was very, very tough, and there was a lot of fear too, because we didn't know whether we were going to be poisoned and things like that. You know, I remember a time when my father and mother had to escape during the night when they saw strangers come. They thought that because all of those sort of things was fresh in our minds, where people had poisoned people with, you know, put into their flour and all this sort of thing, and the tea. And when these strangers offered us some goodies, you know, like tinned foods and all that, but we actually dumped it and we ran away into the bush because, when fear of being poisoned.
Yeah. If you just joined the show, I'm currently talking with Olive Knight, who's in Melbourne at the moment, and we'll talk about that a bit later in the show. This is your third album, this new one.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about how that came about.
The third album, actually, Ivan and I worked for a bit, and then I just sort of, at the time, we lost communication, can we just say that? And then there were this other group called the Desert Feet Tour were coming into the community, and they were doing a lot of visits to, you know, encouraging young up-and-coming musicians and all this sort of thing, and travelling into the schools and writing, you know, doing lyrics and all this sort of thing, so, and assisting the school, you know, with their music and all that. So I happened to be in their path, more or less, and I resisted them for a start, because I thought, oh, who are these people who are coming, you know, like, I don't know them, and why are they asking after me? But instead I said, look, since I'm sort of so passionate about my music, I will now latch onto these people so that I could, you know, get them promoting my music and all this sort of thing, and maybe they will assist me to sort of travel this path, you know, of my passion, more or less.
Okay, well, look, we might take another song from the album, and look, it's an absolute killer. My view is, if I know you didn't enter this in the APRA Awards this year, but I've got a feeling if you had, you'd have to be in the top five. That's an absolute killer of an album with some great players. But let's take another track. This one's called Dream River. Tell us a bit about it.
The Dream River is a story. It's actually an honour to a man I know, who is my cousin, actually. He's the chair of an organisation that I'm also a part of, called Wunan Foundation in the East Kimberley. And this is a song, a tribute to him, because he's a tremendous leader in his own quiet way. He has done a lot in the leadership of the East Kimberley. So the song is a tribute to him.
He drew a picture of a river running wild and deep. He drew a picture of a river running wild and deep. He drew a picture of a river running wild and deep. Those who should ever swim it and be free, those who should ever swim it and be free. He's a quiet achiever, helping people see. He's a quiet achiever, helping people see. He's a quiet achiever, helping people see that a day will deliver hope and security. That a day will deliver hope and security. For which you always dreamed, founder of a cause, for which you always dreamed, founder of a cause, for which you always dreamed, never one for applause or high esteem. Never one for applause or high esteem. You were steady while others rushed along. You were steady while others rushed along. You were steady. Humble visionary with goals so strong. Humble visionary with goals so strong. You were sitting while others rushed along. Along. You were sitting while others rushed along. Humble visionary with goals so strong. Humble visionary with goals so strong. Humble visionary with goals so strong.
Yes, what a beautiful track that is, Dream River. And that's by Tenkawa Nagari, or Olive Knight. And it's off a Heroes and Laments album, which came out earlier this year. Desert Blues by Tenkawa Nagari. There's some beautiful pedal steel playing on that. Olive, who's doing that?
It's a gentleman by the name of Lucky Oceans, and he's quite an accomplished musician in Perth there, and I think a lot of people would know him.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, he's got real feel there. Who are some of the other players on the album?
There's a Richard, accomplished musician himself, on the piano, and I think there is a bit of, well, the drums. Actually, the gentleman on the drums comes being on tour with us, because what we do with Desert Feet, we sort of recruit these people who are coming on visas or work visas, or and if they have some music skills, well, it's the best way for you see the sights, you know, and. It's not that they're not your regular tourists, so we give them a good taste of the desert, and then yeah.
And what about one of the Pigram brothers?
One of the Pigram brothers, Steve Pigram. Now he does a lot of vocals with me on there, and he does a bit of my language, Walmajeri, there in one of the songs, and I've been very fortunate to have him.
Was it recorded?
The album was actually recorded in Bunbury. And there's a recording studio that's out of town, and it's run by a young couple. It looks more like a farm, but it was such a kind of fine area where we could just peace, you know, there was a lot of peace and...
Yeah, it's a nice quite, ambience, in other words.
Yes,
you know, it gets you what you've done here on this album. Tell us a bit more about Desert Feet Tour. Who are they, and what's their involvement with the music?
Well, Desert Feet Tour... It's actually the CEO of the Desert Feet Tour is Perth-based gentleman by the name, and the assistant manager also comes from Perth, and he's a very passionate man. He's passionate to see you know, Indigenous music sort of be alive and well, you know, up there in the community, and as well as being going to promote it elsewhere. So he goes up every year and visits and with the team, the Desert Feet. They started up small because the team actually started up as a music group called the Orphans, and then built it up slowly and got a truck and all that sort of thing, and with all equipped with all the instruments and all that. And now that we have a very new truck, which was money funded by Lotus West, I think, and a lot of it, and from other avenues, and the truck is very. You know, it's equipped with a recording studio, with, you know, the instruments and all this sort of thing. And when we visit the communities, they don't use their own instruments. We are fully equipped. And it's just the people, you know, whoever the budding musicians are.
Want to come up and they have a bit of a jam or something?
Yes.
Look, we might take another track from the album, and there's 10 tracks in all. And there's not a bad one amongst those 10, but this is one of my favourites, or they're all my favourites, but this one's called Train Train. What's this one about?
This one is actually, the influence was came from the United States, the singer that lived in the, I suppose, in the 19, I can't remember the era, but her name was Jessie Mae Hemphill. Well, then again, Ivan was instrumental in this because the man is so knowledgeable and has lived with blues a long, long time, and when I heard the track that of Jessie Mae Hemphill, I thought, well, my, this is beautiful, because I really want to do something with it, you know, and write my own, because the song was actually, the track is Train Train, but the lyrics that I wrote was all to do with because I'm also a radical kind of environmentalist myself, you know, I'd like to care for the land and all this sort of thing, and to this one town. We went to this one town where there's devastation of mining and all that, and you could hear the train, you know, all night carting away the ore. And I thought, well, Mama is being taken away by this train. So all night, Mama, the land, practically is going and leaving.
my shame.
Yes, that train's... That was Olive Knight off her latest album, Heroes and Laments, Wilma Jari Stories. She's a gospel blues singer, one of the few. There's not a heap of them around, is there, Olive?
Not very many, not that I know of, yeah.
What do you put that down to?
I think it's... I suppose it's more or less... Which I'd love to see more female... You know, voice out there,
yes.
Regardless of what genre they've. Of course, blues would be my favorite. Like, I'd like to see more blues and female artists, and as well as, you know, not only doing your covers and contemporary stuff, but your own original kind of languages and adapt it to culture more than anything. I'd say, you know, if you can do it. So that's just the way I went anyway, with my language and adapted a lot of it, yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier on that you're a big environmentalist, and one of the tracks that you've got on there, it's a straight down the line blues, but it's very much talking about what's happening to the land today, and it's Canning Basin Blues. It's just talking about fracking. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, fracking is a major concern for us in the Kimberleys because... There are big mining companies who are now kind of practically threatening the land. That's what we feel, because there's a group that's now operating, which is Fracking No Way, and this group is very, very environmentally aware, and we are practically protesting and against a lot of fracking up there. And there's even went to the extreme where Some groups and families are practically camping and blocking gates and all that. And what we feel about fracking is one of the most devastating issues, I guess, because we now feel for the land. The Canning Basin actually holds our reservoir, our water reservoir there. And if they drill, they will use a lot of water, as well as, and the most dangerous thing about it is that what I've learnt anyway, is that they'll pump in, chemicals and poison into most of the water systems, more or less, you know. And if it goes into the huge water reservoir underneath, it'll practically damage our livelihood, you know. The waters could be poisoned. And also the environment, the pristine desert, we are careful about the deserts, because a lot of it will disappear. The people won't be able to visit their own lands, their water holes and the desert regions, you know, no more, because there'll be just devastation everywhere. So,
Can you tell us what's actually involved in fracking, what the companies actually do?
Well, as you can see, the main thrust is getting the gas out of there. I think it's mainly to do with shattering the shale. They call it the shale gas. I think that's what it is. And the drills, when it's going down, it's not just straight down, you know, drills that drill the oil and everything. But this is more devastating. It's dangerous because the drills will actually shatter the shale underneath and smash it, and any rock that's down there that's stable right now will practically, so that they can extract the gas out of there. So it's your top, you know, it's your companies who are and our government, I believe, and I mean, this is the danger part, who is now giving like the thrust to get more gas and other minerals, you know, out of Mother Earth. And
so it's a real threat to, yes, Mother Earth and the Kimberley region, from what you're saying.
Yes.
When did you actually write this song? How long ago was that?
I actually wrote it in one of the tours that I did to the desert, and through the desert, because the tour with Desert Feet. And it was during those lull moments, you know, when we're not busy, because we do concerts every night, actually, and if during the day you rest, and then all of these lyrics come flooding in, and you're on the land, and the land is your inspiration, and tells you a story about, you know, and the fear, and the it's almost the mother, you know, kind of, look, here I am, you know, say something about me or sing something about me, you know, so that sort of feel when you're actually on there, when you're walking there or saying...
It's like a spiritual attachment.
That's right, it's your spiritual attachment, yeah.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to that track, Canning Basin Blues. This is Olive Knight off her latest album.
Money and their greed. They are coming with their money and their greed. Gonna do something loud, follow me. Gonna crushing and grinding and forcing in. Crushing and grinding and forcing in. Fixing what's left off for me, baby. Fixing. Fixing what's left off for me. Left on for me, baby, fixing. Fixing what's left on for me, baby, fixing. Fixing what's left on for me, baby, fixing.
far for me, baby. Fix it. Fix it. What's left far for me, baby? Fix it. Ooh, fix it. What's left far for me, baby? Fix it. Fix it. What's left far for me, baby? Fix it. Fix it.
There's three tracks on the album, Olive, that are in your native tongue. What made you decide to put those three on the album?
Well, it's actually, as the album title says, Laments, Heroes and Laments, because it's partly a story of heroes as well as the sticklers, you know, and the people who practically tolerate and are living through badness and sadness. And the three of my own original tongue, Walmajeri, the three songs on there, actually speaks about heroes. One of them talks about the old people looking after the land, and we're walking on it, we're living on it, and we are looking after it. And it's a tribute to the old people and the people who are now existing where I come from, you know, who are now living there, who are still visit the land and look after it, you know. And then there's another one that talks about hunting on the land and getting our own food and all that, the men, women, children and all that. And then there's a very original kind of style, which I heard long time ago when I was a young woman. I heard this original, it was a contemporary style of singing by people from further south from where I came from, and it's called Jabu Jabu. That's the style of the singing. It's more or less kind of mixture of using English words as well as indigenous kind of words into it. And one of the instruments I used to listen to these people singing, that the instrument that they used was not even a kind of instrument. It was all a contemporary instrument. It was a tin matchbox which had grooves in it. If anyone can remember the matchbox that we used to get in as in the Kimberleys, you know, the station people, the pastoralists used to give us these rations, and they'd give you a matchbox that was practically tin, and in there was a wax, were full of wax matches which had blue heads. So if any oldies can remember those in the past, but then the people kept the tin and used it as an instrument, you know, scratched it just like the washboard. So I'm practically using an African instrument there on the song, and but originally it was this little tin matchbox that they used, you know, and used it as an instrument to sing this particular style called Jabu Jabu.
Well, look, we'll take that track right now. This is Song of Lament, Jabu Jabu, and it's Olive Knight.
Goodbye, Manjala country, oh, goodbye, Manjala country, oh, goodbye. Goodbye, Manjala country, oh, goodbye, Manjala. Oh, Ali, Ali, Bahurla, Gold, Bango, Ali, Ali, Bahurla, Gold, Bango. Goodbye, Manjala Gandrio. Goodbye, Manjala Gandrio. Oh, Ale, Ale, Bangorla, Gol, Mango. Ale, Ale, Bangorla, Gol, Mango.
me badu mangula jagar mubungu. Me badu mangula jagar mubungu. Me badu kui badu kuyu badu jagar mangula mubungu. Goodbye, Manjala Gandrio, goodbye, Manjala Gandrio, goodbye. Goodbye, Manjala Gandrio, goodbye, Manjala. Wale ngali bangolula kol mangu, wale ngali bangolula kol mangu.
Now, this might seem like a bit of a stupid question, Olive, but I've also heard that you're an elder in your community. How does one become an elder? Is it just an age thing, or is there a bit of initiation ceremony, or how does that all work?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with age thing, but a lot of it has to do with probably the lineage. You know, if you actually got, you know, if there's been elders in a previous to you that had earned the eldership, then it's passed on to the next generation. You know, like, I'm also an elder in another area, a river area, because my grandfather was an elder there. It was in his traditional land, you know. And since my mothers have passed on now, and I'm the next person who's taken on the eldership of my clan, with the community that I'm in at the moment, I'm also an elder there, because of my traditional ties to the land, as well as being part of the old people there, you know, you take on that kind of title, you know.
Now, the other thing too I wanted to ask you was, apparently you've co-written a book.
Yes, I have co-written it with a person who works at the Curtin University there at the literary section. Actually the idea came about when someone did mention it once, my niece actually, and she lived in Kununurra there, and who was instrumental in getting me my music. Her name is Natasha Short, and she's actually really coaxed me into a lot of things. She's my young mentor also, along with Ivan and with the music side, but this particular young lady was sort of coaxed me into a lot of things, writing books and finding funding and all this sort of thing to get me moving on. And so the book is called, to cut the story short, is called The Bohinia Tree. Now, why I titled that, because under this particular Bohinia Tree, which is my native tree up there in the Kimberleys, native Bohinia, that's where I was born. So that's my birth tree, the Bohinia Tree. And it's a story of my life from the beginning to practically with all the things that I've achieved and things that, you know, there's sadnesses and losses and successes and all this sort of thing. So it's more or less a biography, can I call it, and yeah.
So is it available there? Can people buy
it? Yeah, well, it will be available as of December.
Okay.
I think we will.
Just in time for Christmas.
Yes.
Now, one of the reasons you're in Melbourne, and probably the main reason, I guess, is that you're going to be appearing with Hugh Jackman in his Broadway show. Now, I think you've appeared with Hugh before. How did all that come about?
Well, I'm actually employed by the Wesley College here and mentoring students. But at the same time, Hugh had sort of come into fruition, more or less, and I learned about it and all this sort of thing, but kept it a secret for a while. Till I've, and it's now public that he's now been invited to perform with him again for the fourth time. That's right. So he's appearing here in Melbourne at the Rod Laver Arena, yeah.
Yep.
And that's where, and so if people want to come and watch and see, if you have bought your tickets, I don't know whether the tickets are even existing at the moment because the man is so popular and all this, so.
I think somebody mentioned the other day that it's about the fifth show now.
Yes, it is, the fifth show.
So
yeah.
Tickets have been selling really well. What's your part in the show?
Well, I actually end the show with Hugh because he does most of it. It's so spectacular because this is what I dreamt of, you know, seeing, being actually in a musical, in a way he does a lot of musical
yes.
stuff like Singing in the Rain, Carousel and all that, and that's the first part of the section, and then this last part of the section is all to do with his involvement and his connection with the Indigenous people, you know, being out in the community at his young age and all that, and making the film Australia and all that. And and then he brings the Indigenous people in, you know, Didj players and all that. And I'm one of the vocalists there. I do some sort of, I actually sing the last stanza sort of in Somewhere Over the Rainbow in my Wanmajeri language with him that I taught him to end the whole thing. And
yeah, now I believe one of his sons is in the show as well.
His son? Oh, my son.
Yeah.
Yes, Clifton is one of the vocalists too, and he sings his own compositions that he sort of goes does his section just before I come on stage myself. So my son and I are both vocalists there.
Yeah. So how did you actually get the call from Hugh to be part of his shows?
Well, it was quite a, well, what can I say? It's a miracle, more or less. And you know, why me? I thought, you know, because there's thousands of other people whom he would have chosen.
I can think of a lot of good reasons. 10 good reasons, yeah. As a matter of fact. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Well, I think how it came about was listening to, someone had practically talked about my first album and all this sort of thing, and at the same time, I think, well, it was just quite vague to me at the moment what he was after. I think one of the things that he was asking was there was an authentic singer who could both sing in English and in the language. So when Nomad Tuwel suggested me, well, I suppose then he said, well, that's the one.
That's the one. You're the one. Yeah. And the rest is history, as they say. All right, look, well, as I said, we're running out of time, so we might take one more track from the album. Now, earlier on, I did say there were three tracks that you sang in your native tongue. In actual fact, I didn't account for the last one, Jabu Jabu, but so there's actually four. But let's take this track, Korean Poor Country, which is based on old classic country blues, isn't it?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what it is, in a contemporary language called Creole, and the title is Crying Poor Country. The influence came from an old blues singer by the name of Big Bill Brunsey. So if you hear Big Bill Brunsey's influence there, well, if you're a fan of this gentleman, I just love him. I like the way he sort of strums his guitar and sings, you know. So, yeah.
Olive Knight, look, thanks for coming in and having a bit of a talk to us about the album and your life. It's been absolutely fantastic. And look, all the best with the Hugh Jackman show. I don't think you need that, but you'll kill him anyway. Let's have a listen to this track. And what's the name of it again?
Crying Poor Country.
Love me.